This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. As we've discussed before, the Obama administration has decreed that all showers on campuses across the country, whether middle schools or universities, must be open to allow men to use women's showers and restroom facilities. But some states are fighting back. In a letter to top officials in his state, Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry, in a firm rebuttal, stated, quote, "Let me be perfectly clear. President Obama and his appointees do not have legal authority to require our children to share locker rooms and bathrooms with children of the opposite sex. More specifically, the federal government cannot change existing law through unofficial guidance," end quote. The president may be used to getting his way by executive fiat, but not in Louisiana. Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry joined Tony on Tuesday.
Jeff, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And of course, you know a little bit about the authority of the executive branch because you spent time here in Washington in Congress, and you know the checks and balances, and that Congress is actually the one that set the law under Title IX, which this is being used to drive this agenda at the state level.
Correct. And of course, we all know the abuse that has taken part here in Washington, D.C. by the executive branch, by the Obama administration, in trying to create law in this country by basically executive fiat. And of course, this is again another attempt by the president to do exactly that. I believe that he's really overreached this time. We're encouraging Americans out there because a lot of people are concerned. A lot of people are concerned, and rightfully so, because there is multiple facets of problems that are created by the president's position on this. And we outline those in basically an instructional letter to every educational unit in the state of Louisiana saying you do not have to abide by that. And if you are coerced or forced in any manner to contact the Department of Justice in Louisiana, and we're going to defend them.
Now, when pressed, the administration has said, well, yes, we it's not legally binding. However, they're holding these federal funds. Now, it's on average about 9.6% of every, 9 cents out of every dollar that goes into education comes from the federal level. But in Louisiana, there's a pretty significant chance, a percentage, about 10% of the funds are federal. That's what they're holding over the heads of these local schools.
Well, that's what they're claiming they're going to hold. And I think that's important words out there is the fact that they're making a claim that they're going to withhold these funds. They have not actually taken that particular direction. So that gives us an opportunity. It gives us some time. If people out there who are frustrated, mm-hmm. we urge them to get involved and to speak up and to stand up. Because even if you look at what Title IX says as far as what we've reviewed from a legal perspective, nothing in Title IX in Congress's direction to the Department of Education in any way gives them a toehold to be able to implement or withhold funds for the failure to implement this kind of policy.
So what can the, for instance, let's talk about Louisiana. We've got many listeners in Louisiana. What can you as the Attorney General do if a particular school district, let's say Bossier City, is threatened with their funding? Can you be of assistance?
Absolutely. The Constitution places me as the chief legal officer of the state. And what we would do in that case would intervene or we would file suit against the Department of Education, immediately moving for an injunctive order or a temporary restraining order, restraining the department from being able to withhold those funds. I would find it hard to believe any federal judge, even some of the ones that we scratch our heads sometimes in their opinions, would not grant that type of restraining order because of the irreparable harm that would be caused on basically a makeshift policy from the executive. So we would immediately either intervene or file action on behalf of that school system or that school unit in an attempt to keep the federal government from withholding those funds. And I think we would be successful. And then, of course, we'd have to litigate the issue. But again, you know, Tony, the important part for people to understand is that transgender, if you look at, the American Pediatrics put out a statement that basically says that transgender identity is a mental illness. It's, you cannot, there is nothing You cannot change biology. You can't say you were a female and now we're going to make you a male simply by some sort of operation. It doesn't work that way. The good Lord didn't build us in that particular way. So so what they're doing is they're trying to change our sex, who we are, and basically claiming that gender identity can be biological as well as psychological. And if you look at study after study from some of the leading psychologists, John Hopkins University put out one, American Pediatrics, all of them said that this is a mental state. You cannot change a person's biological identity.
But also we're talking about a very, very small percentage. We're talking about 0.5% of the population at best. So 99.5% of the rest of the population is going to have their privacy invaded as a result of this. Hey, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to be back after about a week away. A little bit later, we're going to open up the phone lines of my guest right now, Lieutenant – or the I don't know why I keep wanting to say Lieutenant – Lieutenant Governor.
No.
I don't know. I guess I'm
probably – Attorney General.
All right, okay. All right, I know. All right. The Attorney General of the state of Louisiana, Jeff Landry. Jeff, have you spoken to some of the other attorney generals? I know I've had some conversations. Bill Schuette from Michigan, I've talked to him. And I know other attorney generals have come out speaking on this.
Yeah, a lot of the conservative Republican attorney generals from around the country are taking a stand in this. Ken Paxton is leading a suit in Texas, which a number of us are joining. Schuette is doing the same. We have been discussing it amongst ourselves as to the best way, the best legal way possible to ensure that these types of policies never see the light of day and funding is never in jeopardy. So, there are a lot of great attorney generals. Like I said, I think you're going to see a great suit come out of the state of Texas.
The bottom line is there are people that are going to fight this.
Yes, absolutely. People out there need to know, especially, look, people like in Texas and in Michigan and in Louisiana and in Oklahoma, Scott Pruitt.
Scott's a
we can
guy.
Go on and on. More Attorney General over in South Dakota, Marty. Oh, man, now you're catching me off guard.
It's too cold to use the restroom up there in North Dakota.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. But, countless other ones are going to stand up and fight for it. But it's important, though, Tony, that people out there who are listening, we need their support.
Right.
When they raise their voices, when they email their members of Congress, when they email their local state senators and representatives and school board members, it helps propel us. It gives us the support we need to stand strong for them.
And, of course, you want to encourage those local school boards, superintendents, and others at the local level to resist and call upon their attorney generals and others to stand with them.
Absolutely. And we also want to make sure that if in any way they do actually feel threatened or they believe they're following through on this guidance, we want them to contact our office. So if you're in Louisiana, we want you to contact the Department of Justice. You can go on our website at agjefflandry.com and let us know.
All right, Jeff, thanks so much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, Tony. God bless you.
You can find out more about Jeff Landry when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, Middle East expert Joel Rosenberg joins us to talk about FRC's Watchmen on the Wall conference. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. This week, FRC has been hosting our annual Watchmen on the Wall conference. We come together to encourage pastors to pray for our nation, preach the whole counsel of God without apology, and partner with other pastors. Best-selling author and Middle East expert Joel Rosenberg spoke at the Watchmen conference and joined Tony to highlight his message.
Joel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony, and great to be back in Washington.
Today, you delivered a sobering message in some ways to awaken the pastors to the reality of what's happening in the Middle East to their brothers and sisters who are being persecuted. We're seeing levels of Christian persecution that we have never seen before.
Yeah. Open Doors, in their annual report on persecution worldwide, said 2015 was the worst in the modern era of Christian persecution worldwide. Nine of the top 10 worst persecuting countries, persecuting Christians, are in the Middle East. North Korea tops the list for the 14th year in a row.
Right.
But all the rest of them are either in sub-Saharan Africa or in the Middle East. And radical Islam, and what you and I have talked about it in terms of apocalyptic Islam,
right.
People trying to bring about the end of the world, not just kill us, but try to annihilate us and bring about the end of the world. This is ISIS, and this is leading to not just persecution in the Middle East. There is tremendous persecution, but 2,400 churches burned, destroyed, or damaged. 7,100 Christians killed just last year. But on top of that, you really have a genocidal situation going on right now in Syria and Iraq, where ISIS is not simply trying to kill. They're trying to either drive Christians out of the region or enslave them or forcibly convert them to Islam or kill them. All of that fits under the definition by the UN Convention from 1948 of genocide.
Right.
That's what's happening right now, and it's horrific.
And finally, just about a little over a month ago, the Secretary of State, John Kerry,
yes,
after Congress really forced his hand on this, said, yes, what's happening in the Middle East, what ISIS is engaged in, is in fact genocide.
Good point. I should have actually mentioned that in my remarks this morning, because that it's at least worth that the administration, after being urged for about a year and a half to say it that way, that this is really genocide against Christians and other minorities, that they did with Secretary Kerry. The reason that's important is because we now need the UN to say it, because there's a whole series of things that
right.
It's one thing to say it. That's the minimum. Then you have to go do something about it, because we've all said never again when we think of the Holocaust and the Jews. But now you've got Christians, a minority group called the Yazidis, and you have Muslims who are dying in Syria, and in Iraq in ghastly numbers. We've seen it's very interesting, the number of Christians, or at least whether they, however they describe themselves theologically, but they are followers of Jesus Christ, that by their definition has dropped by 80% in Iraq.
Yeah.
And something like 2/3 in Syria. The ISIS is trying to annihilate the Christian community.
And folks, keep in mind, we've talked about this before, but that is in some of those places in northern Iraq, those are areas where the church was first established.
Yeah, that's right. Right. So you have Abram, who becomes Abraham, who God chooses to settle in Israel. His grandson is Jacob, becomes Israel. But he comes from Iraq. And then once the gospel is proclaimed and Christ dies, is resurrected, and the gospel goes forth, it's St. Thomas,
right.
Thomas the Apostle, who stopped doubting. Now he'd seen the resurrected Christ. And where does he go? He goes eastward through what we now call Jordan, plants churches as he preaches the gospel in Iraq, and eventually goes to India. And so the church there is ancient. I mean, you've got
right. Goes all the way back to the beginning.
Goes back to the beginning, and yet I've been to Iraq four times now, and doing pastors' conferences, visiting pastors. It's interesting for a Jewish believer in Jesus from the United States, now a citizen of Israel, but to go to Iraq and to stand and spend time with our brothers and sisters there. But they are beleaguered, and yet I got to say they the courage they have is amazing.
Yeah.
It's purifying their faith, right? I mean, if a person is not really wanting to follow Jesus, they've already given up.
Right.
But if they are, these people are. One pastor said to me, it's sort of like the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes, the fires in Iraq right now are seven times hotter, and yet Jesus is walking with us in the fire. It's pretty powerful.
It is. It is. And one of the things that is so important, and I know you've seen this and heard this, even though America, as we look around and we see the culture here and we're disturbed by what's happening in this country, still Christians in faraway places who are being persecuted for their faith take hope in seeing that America and Christians in America actually take notice of their plight and try to help and speak out on their behalf.
That's true. And I think that one of the things I've just personally experienced is as I've traveled to Iraq, to Afghanistan, to Egypt and Turkey and spend time with persecuted Christians, they're not asking primarily for money or for, you know, some sort of material assistance. They're encouraged that anyone knows about them, wants to come visit them, just sit with them, sometimes weep with them, but just hear their stories. I consider them heroes. You know, when my wife and kids and I, we moved to Israel, that's the island of sanity for Christians. It's a Jewish nation. There's not a lot of followers of Jesus. They're more than ever, but still not a lot. But but Israel and Jordan are the safety zones. They're the cities of refuge, as it were, countries of refuge. But for when you, as a believer, go and visit people who are on the front lines, preaching the gospel, making disciples under threat of their life, they're tremendously encouraged. And then praying for them, and of course, when you see them and get to know their stories, you pray for them more faithfully than you might otherwise have.
Right, they become real. I mean, it's important.
And they're inspiring to see people living that way.
Courage breeds courage.
It does. You've made that point in your new book.
And that was one of the reasons we had you, Joel, at the pastor's conference. Well, one of the many reasons, but the topic that we wanted you to address today as you talked to the Watchman, Joel, was what is happening to our brothers and sisters and that they're standing and that we have an obligation to speak on their behalf and stand with them. But their courage to stand uncompromisingly for Jesus Christ is an inspiration to us to stand not against swords and guns, but maybe op-eds and maybe bad ordinances and social media posts that might be derogatory about Christians. I mean, what we face pales in comparison to what they are facing. But nonetheless, we take courage that they can stand for Christ in the face of that. And so we can do the same here.
We can. There's a great book. I didn't mention it in my talk today, but I would encourage people to read it. It's by a dear brother, Pastor Tom Doyle. It's
right.
called Killing
Tom,
Christians.
Have
you had it on the show?
Tom has been on the program talking about that.
Good. Well, he's a dear friend. We've been to Afghanistan together and other countries, and he just tells eight stories of persecuted Christians who the stories are so inspiring. And I just think that, Mindy Bells has a new book out about ISIS and Christians. And I was just with the vicar of Baghdad who we were hoping would be here at the conference but is not feeling well right now, Canon Andrew White, who lived for several decades serving the church and serving the people of Iraq in Baghdad. Just 2 years ago, he finally had to leave because of the violence. I just had tea with him in Jerusalem, of all places, on Sunday evening. And just I had never met him before. I was hoping to meet him here at this conference.
He sat there in that chair about 3 or 4 months ago.
Well, he's a man of character, and he's a man who sees the benefits. Sometimes there's not things that we can do for our brothers and sisters. There's not aid we can get them. We can't fix the situation. We can't get them out sometimes. Sometimes just sitting with them, weeping with them, praying with them, and having them say to us, don't give up.
Yeah.
Like they have tremendous courage and they inspire us to keep living and preaching the gospel with courage and clarity.
Well, Joel, I appreciate you being here. Appreciate what you're doing there in Israel and keeping us Christians here in the United States fully informed on our role there in the Middle East. So thanks so much.
It's an honor. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
You can find out more about Joel Rosenberg when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we return, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan joins us to talk about some legislative moves in Congress. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Most of us are aware of ISIS's barbaric practices and their unceasing violation of Christians and other minority groups' religious liberties in Iraq and Syria. When persecution is supported by a nation's laws and/or driven by its culture, it is never acceptable. It deserves our attention. Family Research Council recently hosted a panel discussion entitled Religious Liberty Around the World, Where We Stand as of Spring 2016, with some of the world's leading experts on the topic. To hear this conversation, visit frc.org/university.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Earlier this week, the House of Representatives voted on the NDAA amendment from Congressman Steve Russell that would have simply aimed to protect the First Amendment rights of religious businesses and organizations contracting with the Defense Department. Democrat Representative Sean Maloney put forward an amendment that would have stripped the religious freedom provision from the bill. Well, the Maloney Amendment was actually passed Wednesday night with help from several Republicans. However, the overall spending bill was defeated on Thursday for the second time, which means the fight is ongoing. Chairman of the House Freedom Caucus and representative from the 4th Congressional District of Ohio, Jim Jordan, joined Tony with the latest on Thursday.
Look, the bill went down today because, when you don't want to have on record the House of Representatives supporting a piece of legislation that contains within it language that restricts religious liberty. I mean, we're the country that, we're the country where pilgrims got on a boat, risk it all to come here to practice their faith the way they think the good Lord wanted them to. And this is what our country's all about. And so you saw the House today just say, no, we're not going to pass this bill with the Maloney language in it.
What was also interesting about that vote, Congressman Jordan, was that the Democrats that put the Maloney Amendment on the bill, 93% of them then turned around and voted against the bill. So
yeah.
It looks like it was not this was about political theater. This was about them trying to make a statement that they're carrying the water for the LGBT community.
It was politics, plain and simple. And it was done in a framework and in a context of what's happening in North Carolina with the president's directive a few weeks ago. It was done in that framework, and that's why we said, look, let's make sure that we don't affirm this in any way. And a number of us on the Republican side said no to it. And, of course, the Democrats, I think, said no to the final bill, just as you said, for political reasons.
Now, you mentioned the North Carolina situation. There was another amendment to the bill that passed last night overwhelmingly by a vote of 227-192 that would have restricted the Obama administration from withholding federal funds to punish any state that did not comply with their bathroom edict. So that, too, was a statement, I think, actually is the first legislative statement by the Congress since the president's overreach on the bathroom. So that actually was a positive thing that was attached to the bill.
Right. There was some positive language in the bill. There was some good, but overall it was that, as we said, the Maloney Amendment, which it wound up bringing the legislation down and why it didn't pass today. But I'm always struck, Tony, by, you think about all the big issues we have. We got this terrorist threat. We got a $19 trillion debt. We got an economy that's not growing like it should. And what is the debate in the country? And what's this president talking about? A bathroom policy in North Carolina and changing something in the interest of adults that everyone knows will jeopardize the safety of children. That is ridiculous. And yet that's what we're talking about in American politics today with all these other big issues that we need to address. It makes absolutely no sense, and yet that's where, unfortunately, we are.
Yeah, what is fascinating about that to me, Congressman Jordan, is that you have the media and liberals who say, well, look at those Republicans. Look at all that time they spent last night debating this bill and religious liberty, when in fact they're the ones that provoked the debate by pushing this policy on bathrooms all across America.
Yeah, they always say, oh, you guys on the right, you conservatives, you pro-life, pro-family people, you're always talking. It's like, look, we have to talk about it because you keep shoving the other side in our face and forcing us to deal with it. We'd rather focus on some other issues. But when the president issues a directive, that is just makes no sense. When we, again, I always come back to this. you can't put the interest of some, very few adults, ahead of the safety of all kids. You can't do that. And yet that's what I believe this policy, in fact, does. And the president's weighing, you know, it, again, makes no sense, and they keep pushing it in our face, and so we have to react. Or it'll keep getting worse. We will see a downward spiral, and it truly is a slippery slope when it comes to just basic values.
Well, let me talk about that slippery slope, Jim, because the Maloney Amendment, which was adopted to the bill, which ended up, as you said, killing the bill, had the assistance of 43 Republicans. What's going on there?
Well, it's unfortunate that some of our colleagues voted for the legislation. I wish they hadn't. I wish, you know, our party is supposed to be the party that says traditional values, faith and family and the institution of marriage and the sanctity of human life are of paramount importance, and we're supposed to defend them. Unfortunately, there are some in the party who don't hold to those same beliefs as we do. So it was unfortunate to see, but we got to figure out a way to move forward and do the work the government's supposed to do without having things like this actually get adopted into legislation.
Jim, we're up against a break, almost out of time, but one final question for you. Do those legislators, and both Republican and Democrats, need to hear more from folks like our listeners on these issues?
Of course. Of course. I mean, that's, you know, what's the old adage in politics is most politicians don't see the light. They feel the heat.
Right.
And they need to understand from constituents across their country, from families they hear about, that, look, let's keep basic policies the same here. Let's not change some things that have worked pretty darn well for our culture and for a long time.
All right. Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, have a great Memorial Day weekend, and we'll see you when Congress returns.
You too, Tony. Take care, brother.
Well, you can find out more about today's guests when you go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.